This conversation with Howard Schuller took place on March the 2nd, 1975, in Mr. Schuller's home at 7808 South Lewis Avenue. There you go.
Is that all ready to shout into? Mm-hmm. That mic
close. It's all ready to go.
We moved here in about 1946, but we bought the place about a year previous to that, and we couldn't move in at that time because we had to build a house and a barn. The barn was built first, and we moved in and lived in the barn while the house was being built. And I remember that I thought it was lots of fun living in a barn. And after a while, as it got colder, why, my father built a little outside shed we used for a summer kitchen. You know, I could tell you better.
Did your father do the constructing himself?
No, we, a neighbor up the road here by the name of Pierce Archer was a carpenter, and he built the barn first. There were a lot of oak trees in the front yard, and they were cut down and hewn, and we used the timbers to start the barn off. And then along in the summer, the foundation was laid for this house, and Frank Anstead and Charlie Kelly were the carpenters who built this, the first part of this house. And it wasn't until late in the fall before it was completed enough for us to move into it after the plaster became dry, got the dampness out. At that time, the house was fairly small. There were three rooms. One was the kitchen dining room. Another was a bedroom. And the front small room was a parlor. That was downstairs. There was no basement. Upstairs was a hall and two bedrooms. And later on, of course, my father built the kitchen on. And then the next move was to add on the upper ground cellar.
Now, how old were you when you moved out here?
When we moved out here from Toledo, I was about 8 and a half years old.
And you were the only child, right?
I was the only child at that time, yes. I had a stepsister who lived up in Detroit.
And now, did your father farm this land?
This is only 10 acres, and it wasn't, you couldn't consider it as a farm. It was too small. However, we had to raise vegetables and fruit and things like that. We got along all right that way.
Did you have any close neighbors?
Yes, in those days, of course, it wasn't built up. It was all farmland. We had across the road was a big farm, George Newcomb, and to the south next door was a 40-acre farm owned by John Lasky, and to the north was another farm about equal size owned by John Kelly.
Now, when you started school, which school did you attend?
I went over here to Liberty Corner School. I can distinctly remember the first day I ever went to school over there. I think maybe it was my father or my mother that drove me over there, and I remember going through the deep sand roads, you know, and there was this little schoolhouse, brick schoolhouse, one room, and it was entirely different from what I I had been used to or had thought of. And school, I think, started then about 8:30. Then along about 9:30, there was recess for 15 minutes, and then we came in until noon. Had an hour off for noon and play. Again, in the afternoon, about 2:30, was another recess. And then at 4 o'clock, the school closed, and everybody scampered for home.
Do you recall who your first teacher was in that building?
Yes, the first teacher was Clara Hayden. And she was a native from these parts. I think their family lived a little bit north or northeast of Temperance. And I can remember each teacher that we had. I'll take that back. The first one was Miss Hoisington, and she lived at that time across from the Bibb homestead over there. Then came Miss Clara Hayden. Then the next one was Lillian Street. That's T-R-E-I-T or I-E-T. And after that was Sarah Davis. She was a good teacher. And then came Dan... Anyway, the last teacher she married George May. Ida Waffle, that was her name. Now, speaking of this one teacher, Sarah Davis, that summer I broke my leg, and I was along about in August, and I was laid up until... Oh, perhaps I couldn't get to school until maybe the latter part of September or October. Now, I was always grateful to Miss Davis because she, every Friday, she walked over from Liberty School over here and tutored me just for the goodness of her heart. And I had difficulty with fractions before that with a previous teacher. And Miss Davis straightened me all out.
I remember you were telling me once how sometimes when you'd ring the bell, the rope would go up.
Yes.
And what would you do?
Well, sometimes the boys were always anxious to ring the bell. And they would ring it a little too hard sometime, and the bell rope would jump off of the bell wheel. So then somebody would have to shimmy up the rope up into the tower there and correct the bell rope.
Do you know what happened to the bell from that school?
Yes, the bell is now Dale Ware over on Stearns Road, midway between Lewis and Jackman. He's quite a bell collector now, and he has the bell.
When you were small, which church did you attend?
My father and mother, of course, and I, too, were members of a church in Toledo. But after we moved out here, it was kind of difficult to go there very often. So my folks would go to church once in a while when convenient, but my mother insisted that I go to Sunday school. So I went over here to Liberty Corners. At that time, it was a Wesleyan Methodist, and I went there until I got past my mid-teens, and then I discovered there were more young people up in Temperance than the Baptist Church, so I transferred my affiliations up there.
Was it in the church that they used to have the custom of the box socials?
And the schools, too. Oftentimes, the schools want to raise a little money to get something, maybe a few books or maybe a new globe or something like that, you know. So they'd have a box social. And, of course, that was always fun. The girls would all wrap up their lunch in a shoe box and wrap it up in paper and a lot of fancy ribbon, and then the auctioneer would hold it up. And... The the highest bidder got it.
Now, you mentioned you raised a lot of your own vegetables and fruit and all here, right on the premises. Where would you go for the staples and all that you couldn't raise right here at home?
Well, about all we needed would be sugar, salt, coffee, flour. Aside from that, I think we were quite able to take care of the rest of it.
Now, would you go up to a store in Temperance, or would you go into West Toledo for the things that you did have to buy?
Usually.
Down in Lewis Avenue, Sylvania, and Phillips area?
No. For a long time, we went to Marlowe's. Now, Marlowe's is on Detroit Avenue, right near where the creek flows through. We used to get things there. I don't remember buying that we bought very many things up in Temps. I suppose sometime if we ran short, we'd go up and get something.
Were there many stores in Temperance at that time?
No, I think there was just one store, and that was a combination store. It had had yard goods, it had minor hardware like kitchen stuff, it had groceries, the staples, maybe pickles and beans and coffee and sugar and salt and things like that. It also had the post office.
And where was that located?
That was the George Kinney store. And that building is still there. It's on the Temperance Road, and it's just a little bit east of Lewis Avenue, and it's on the south side.
And now, when you had to have the blacksmith and work like that done, where was the blacksmith located? Do you recall that?
There were two or three or more blacksmith shops. Now, Ed Nogar, that's the name, was the one who had the shop on the west side of Lewis Avenue, right north of the present bank. And then there was another blacksmith across the road, and I think there were one or two on the West Temperance Road.
Well, that was a flourishing business then. Now, I've heard you refer to the cider mill. Where was the cider mill? The
cider mill was over in Lambertville, and that was on the Dean Road, and directly across from the cemetery up there.
Now, did you raise apples and take them over to the cider mill in the fall?
We had an apple orchard, and as I say, we had different kind of fruit-bearing trees. In the fall, of course, we'd had to take a load of apples over to the mill and have it crushed out for cider. And later on in the fall, we always raised a little buckwheat. And we had the buckwheat ground for buckwheat flour, so that we have enough buckwheat flour for in the winter for pancakes.
Those tasted good on a cold winter morning, didn't they?
Of course, we always had our peas, so we had plenty of ham and sausage and things like that.
Did you help with the butchering in the fall?
Not until I got older. I just was the only thing I did was to help clean the pig's body off and get the hair off, you know. And that what we had to do then. We had a barrel of hot water, and we'd have to run the pig up and down in that scalding water until it was just right, and then haul the pig out and then scrape the hair off. Well, of course, after that, the pig was hung up and dressed and so on.
Did your mother make lard?
Yes, we always had lard, and we had sausage, and we always had our own meat. Very seldom, well, once in a while, we'd have to change it and get some beef. or get some lamb, mutton, things like that. We always had chickens and ducks and geese. And not very many, no geese, but we had turkeys. And of course we had all the eggs we needed. And with many eggs left over to sell. My mother used to make butter. She baked her own bread. I know Saturday was always baking day. The kitchen always had a delicious smell of fresh baked bread.
And Sunday was company day as a rule?
Well, I don't think we had too much company, or we didn't go too much. It was a kind of a rest day after a week's work. We were kind of content to just take it easy that day. Of course, we always had chores to take care of, and that took up part of the time. Of course, my mother insisted that I go to Sunday school. And sometime I kind of rebelled a little bit because I'd walk over there every 5 days of the week to school, and I didn't think it was always necessary to walk again on the seventh day.
Were you ever permitted to take your horse?
Take what?
To take a horse, or did you always have to walk?
Oh, I walked, yes. No, the horse was for work purposes and going to town. No, I couldn't. I didn't, never, until later on when I had a horse of my own, horse and saddle that I used to run around country with.
I noticed one of your paintings. It shows, I think, the old Liberty Corner School, and the children were going for a sleigh ride. Was that a popular winter activity?
Well, this neighbor across the road, of course, in the wintertime, there wasn't too much work around, and beside the chores and milking the cows. And Mr. Newcomb would say sometime to the hired man, you better go over to the schoolhouse there and pick up the kids. So he'd hook up onto the sled, go over there, and we'd get a ride home.
Now, after you left Liberty Corner School, where did you go to school? Where did they have a high school out here at that time?
No, not at that time. I had to go up to Detroit.
Do you recall when the high school was built?
You mean here?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't. I don't remember at all. And I remember the little old one-story frame school, eighth-grade school there, but I don't remember when they started high school. It probably was after I was older or something. Of course, the barn was brand new. It had, usually barns are just one floor because they have to store hay in there, but this barn had a second floor. And of course, the second floor is where we bunked. We didn't bunk, we just lay on the floor. That was the bed then. And downstairs was, and there was another bedroom for my parents. And I think they had a table in there where we ate. But the cooking, of course, was all done in that little summer kitchen, which was right near where the old well now is.
Were you reluctant to move out into the country from town, or?
I thought that was a wonderful thing, to get out in the country. It was something wonderful, and I've never regretted it. I wouldn't exchange my country days for I don't know how much, a whole lot. And especially my little country school days. I think, I often think back to them. It's a pleasure to think of the happy times that I had there. Of course, in the summer, we played outside, and in the fall, there were a lot of big maple trees in front that we used to gather the leaves and make make forts. The school used a big stove that took a big long cordwood piece of wood in. Well, in the fall when the neighbors brought that wood to the school, we would use that and build walls with that and then chuck the crevices with these leaves. Of course, in the wintertime, when the snow was on the ground, we had different kind of outdoor games, fox and geese and things like that. And there was always a little pond in the back of the school. Over in the May farm, we used to skate on there. I don't know which season that was really happier, whether it was fall, spring, or winter. There was always a lot of fun to be had.
Now, I know boys will be boys, and they act up sometimes. What method of correction did the teachers employ back in those days?
Well, I was fortunate to to go over to school there after. I still remember that they must have had a man teacher before I went over there who had a nice long whip hung up on the wall. And he would use that for punishment for the kids. Oh, sometime the teacher would take a rule and you held out your hand and you got a few slaps, but that was about the limit of it. It wasn't anything more than that.
Do you recall how many children were in your class when you first started? All the grades were together in one room, right?
They were all together, yes. I don't remember just how many there were. The first when I first went to school, we had the old original desks, and they were just pine desks with a seat, and back of the seat, of course, was the desk for the other pupil. They were for two pupils sitting together, and the desks were so old that through the different generations or whatever you might call it, the top was pretty badly scarred and carved, and sometimes holes carved through. And in those days, of course, we used slates. And there was always a clatter when you take a slate pencil and scratch it on that slate. It made quite a screech. There wasn't a very clean way of cleaning your slate besides just using saliva. And, of course, the slate never had a very nice odor to it after all of that sort of thing. It wasn't bad, but you could know that the slate wasn't clean, real clean. But I think I used a slate until I got up to maybe the sixth grade or seventh grade before we had little pads of paper to use.
And then you didn't waste it, did you?
I don't remember. I don't think that we were too careful with it. Just like the kids' school books. Oftentimes, when one kid would pass into the next grade, he would sell his book to one of the lower grades, and consequently, after they'd gone through a number of years like that, they became pretty dog-eared, and maybe some pages were missing, or some were loose, or the cover was all scuffed up.
Do you have any idea what the population of Bedford Township was when you moved out here?
I could only guess. It was a farm community, and there weren't too many people. I wouldn't even venture to guess how many there were, whether there were 400 or 600 or what.
Now, was Lewis Avenue one of the main thoroughfares at that time?
I think perhaps it was more of a main thoroughfare than the east and west roads were. Jackman Road, I think, was a good road because Jackman Road was the first road to be stoned in Ohio. And I know that in the spring, when the frost got out of the ground, oftentimes rather than try to get through all this mud on Lewis Avenue, we'd hook over onto Jackman at the state line and then follow that stone road into West Toledo to Phillips Avenue. But Lewis Avenue was a dirt road for quite a good many years. I don't remember just when the first paving was. That was probably, well, I wouldn't even venture to guess. But I know that Jackman Road from the state line to West Toledo was the first paved road that we had here.
I hadn't realized that. And you had the church in the corner there on Stearns and Jackman. And what were the schools usually, did you tell me, a mile apart?
The schools were usually 2 miles apart. And usually 2 miles apart each way.
Can you remember where other schools were located?
Well, of course, there's the Lord's School, as it was known at that time. Now it's called the Banner Oak. That was on the corner of Stearns and this next road over here.
Crab.
And then you go north, and I think there were two schools there kind of close together. One was known as the old Stone School. But I think there was a frame school not too far from that stone school. You take the other way from Liberty Farm School, the next school north would have been the Temperance School on Temperance Road. And then going further north yet would be on the Samaria Road, Samaria and Jackman. That's where the center now is.
Yeah, I think, was that original building, did it burn, or was it demolished with the tornado? What happened to that?
Which one is that?
The original building there in Samaria.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember. I know that the present building is not the original one. The original one was framed, as I remember. And a number of years ago, there was a cyclone tornado passed through here. I think it ripped off the steeple off of the Lambertville Church, did damage there, and it may be that that same storm might have ruined the Samaria School.
Were there sawmills in this area when you were a young boy?
Yes, there was a Smith's sawmill. That's on the Smith Road there, just a little bit west of where the Smith School now is. That's the only sawmill I remember. Of course, the farmers, they used to, in the wintertime, they had to cut wood for they burnt wood in their kitchen stove and possibly in the stove that they had in the living room. And the log part, the good part, they would sew into lengths and haul that to this mill, and the mill would saw out timber. And then the farmers would take that timber home and stack it and let it get dried out. And then if they wanted to build a barn or a corn crib or a chicken coop or something, they'd use that barn.
I can remember reading and hearing reference to the barn raising, where all the neighbors would pitch in if someone needed a barn or something like that. Can you remember
those days?
I
remember very well. The neighbor across the road here had a barn raising a long time ago. And all the neighbors pitched in and helped raise it. the sections were all assembled together and laid flat on the ground, and then they were just raised up in proper place and pegged with wooden pegs.
The ladies prepared the food while the men did the labor.
That's true, yes. And they always did a very wonderful job of it, too.
It was not only a time of pitching in to helping your neighbor, it was almost a social event, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
The same way as the quilting bee. Can you remember, did your mother ever participate in the quilting bees?
I don't remember whether she did. I do remember that she... family in Lambertville, and I presume there must have been one over in Erie. But Dr. Kelly took care of all this region pretty well. Of course, people have their own ideas as to who they want for a doctor, even though there might have been some people here that preferred maybe Dr. Parmalee instead of Dr. Kelly. They have him.
Came on horseback, of course.
Well, that might have been before my time. They always came in their
buggies.
But the doctors in those days, they had no regular hours. You could, if you had some illness or something, you'd have to hitch up and drive up to the doctor and rout him out of bed if it was midnight. And he, in turn, would get dressed and hitch up in his buggy and come down and see him. Time seemed to mean very little to, in other words, it didn't bother a doctor much. He was on call any time of day or night.
And too, at that time, the neighbors would all pitch in to help if there was illness, didn't they?
They'd always come over and help. The women would come over, and especially if the farm wife was ill. The neighbor women would come over. They'd bring hot dishes and things like that.
I can remember once you were telling me that the 30th of May used to be a big day. That was. Can you recollect some of the happenings of the 30th of May?
Oh yes, that was Memorial Day. That was a wonderful day. It was one of the big days of the year. Over in Lambertville, they had always had. Memorial services. It would be an all-day affair, and it was more of a homecoming. People would come from all over the neighborhood. They'd bring their lunch, and of course they'd decorate the graves and have visits. Then at noon, they'd all gather down into the church basement, and the church would. Served dinner. I think the dinner, the earliest time I can remember, cost about 25 cents. Then in the afternoon, why, everybody would climb upstairs into the church, and they'd have one, two, and sometimes three speakers, patriotic speakers. And I know that it took quite a long time. After that was over, why, the old veterans of the Civil War would all file. March out into the cemetery and have their little ritual. In the meantime, of course, all the graves would be decorated with a little flag. And that usually wound up the Memorial Day. But Memorial Day was a day, and it was a day, all day. Of course, they couldn't stay too long. They had their chores to do, so long about maybe half past four or even 5 o'clock, they had to get in their wagons or buggies, whatever they had, go home to take care of the chores.
Now, what was the 4th of July like?
Well, I don't think there was too much doing in those days in the 4th of July. I know that the first ones I remember, there was a park up in Samaria, not very far west of Lewis Avenue. It was the woods at that time. It was the park. And I think the 4th of July they had a speaker and kind of a homecoming like that. And I don't remember very much about temperance. The cars parked there wasn't made into a park until a good many years later, probably around, maybe 1918 or 20, something like that. Then I think they used to have some festivities there. That's about the only thing. Memorial Day was really the big day.
How long have they been celebrating homecomings in this area? I know Temperance used to have its own, didn't it? When we moved out here, Temperance still had a homecoming up here at Dr. Soda's Park. And now, of course, there's just the one in Lambertville. Do you recall how far back these went?
Well, I think before Dr. Soda's, the homecomings often were held in Cars Park, north of Temperance proper. As far as homecoming in Lambertville, I don't remember when that was organized. I think Dr. Cromley was quite influential in organizing that. I'm not sure about that, but I think it was on his property. As a matter of fact, the park was named after him, Cromley Park. Of course, in Temperance, there were the Ansteds, the Brunts, and the Kinneys. And they were all around in the village or west of the village, around there. I think they must have been about the earliest ones there. Then there were the McClanathans, that was another, they were early settlers. And I forget the name of the people who had lived in that old house just north of the greenhouse there. It's Schinkel's home now. That was one of the very old houses there. And the pioneers lived in there. I just can't remember their name right now. And over in Lambertville, of course, I wasn't too familiar with that part of the township. Of course, I knew all the people around in this vicinity for maybe a radius of 2 miles or more.
There used to be Indians in this area, right?
Well, they say there were, because over at Lambertville, there was that cup and saucer house with the little cupola on top, and I know I read an article about that one time, that the early people who occupied that place or built it used that as an observation point to see if any Indians were around or coming.
I believe you found some Indian relics and all when you were a child, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I used to make a habit of looking for arrowheads. I never was lucky enough to get a hatchet, but I found a skinning stone and a great number of arrowheads. Oftentimes, when I'd come home from school, I'd cut across lots through the old John Newcomb place. There were sand fields there and on their farm, and usually I could find arrowheads in there. And of course, I found arrowheads in different parts too, away from here too. But I had quite a nice little collection at one time.
What was Christmas like when you were a small boy?
Well, Christmas was always a family day here. We had some relatives here, nearby relatives, oftentimes, my mother's folks all lived down in Columbus. That was the old homestead, and the three of us used to go down there for Christmas, spend the week. We'd have a neighbor kind of look after the things here.
Would you travel by train?
Yes. There were two trains at that time. There was the Ohio Central, That was over on the east side, right across the river from the bridge there. And there was the Hocking Valley, and that was in the old depot where the now new depot stands. And that was always a great time for me. I always looked forward to that. Of course, there was the Christmas tree and all the little gifts and all that sort of thing. But in those days, if I got a 5-cent toy, I thought it was a wonderful thing. I didn't have to get a motorbike or a snowmobile, anything like that.
Can you remember when they used to have candles on the trees?
Oh, yes, we used to have it too. Now, on our porch, the porch that we used to have on the house here, we always had a Christmas tree with candles, and when the candles were lit, it was usually my job to sit out there on the cold porch and watch those candles that they didn't burn up the tree.
Did you have a bucket of water close?
I don't remember. I presume maybe we did, but I know that there were some times that some of the flame of the candle would ignite the branches above, and there'd be some hustling around to take care of it.
What did you do when there would be a fire?
You mean a bad fire? Well, it used to be the custom among farmers that if there was any emergency, like a fire or a terrible accident or something, they'd go out and ring their bell. And in case of a fire, why, somebody's bell would ring, each bell seemed to have a different tone, and you could identify those bells, whose bells they were. And if a bell like that rang in an emergency, why, and people heard it, why, they'd immediately try to hustle over there and see what they could do. Well, only thing they could do would be to rush the water line with pails of water, that's all. I remember the old McClanathan house up in Temperance there. That caught fire, and there was no fire department or anything like that, but it got such a headway that I don't think it took more than about 25 minutes, it was all gone.
Usually a fire meant real disaster, didn't it?
Yeah.
There was very little.
Unless you caught it when it very first started, why, other than that, why, you might as well call it a loss.
Now then, when you were a young man, you went to World War I, is that right? And then when you came back, you worked in Toledo?
I worked in an architectural office before the war. And I think I started in about 1908. And then, of course, the first part of 1917, why I quit, I enlisted. And afterwards, why I went back again. The same office where I had been last. In fact, I'd received a letter from the firm urging me to hurry back. There was some work to do. Well, I stayed there. I was there with that firm for 20 years. And after due time, my name was also on the door, one of the partners.
When were you married, and whom did you marry?
We were married in August 31st, 1935. And my wife's maiden name was Barnes. Her first name, Christian name, was Catholic. And we went up to Monroe to be married. We had some very close couple of friends that went up and helped us out. And we went to the Trinity Church parsonage. couldn't get married in the church because they were remodeling it or doing something. But the rector married us in his choir, the house. And then, of course, we went up to Dearborn Inn for trying to seal the bargain. These friends paid the bill.
Mrs. Schuler was a teacher?
She was an English teacher. She went to school in Meadville, Pennsylvania, and I guess she taught school in Pennsylvania for a while and then came back to Toledo where her parents were. And I think she started in Woodward there. Afterwards, well, she went to that girl's school.
Harriet Whitney Vocational.
Whitney Vocational. And then she retired. Her health wasn't too good, so Mr. Bowsher told her that perhaps it'd be better if she retired due to that health problem.
You used this as your summer home and spent your winters at the Hillcrest Hotel for quite a while?
Well, that was when we were first married. The house wasn't really fitted for comfort. It had no the heating. The only heat we had was from the hard coal stove. So I think it must have been about 5 or 6 years that we'd move into the Hillcrest along about November sometime and move home in the latter part of March or April. And then we decided that it'd be better to fix the place up and be here all year round. So in 1948, we remodeled the whole works and been here ever since. I've been alone ever since the 21st of June in
59.
Mm-hmm. Managed to get along all right with a host of very fine, good friends. Of course, it isn't like it used to be, but everything changes, we change, everything else changes.
You've seen a lot of growth and development in Bedford Township, haven't you?
Yes, everything has changed. And, of course, when I was as a boy or a young man, it was all farmland around here, but gradually through the years, there have been housing developments here and there. As a matter of fact, I'm almost surrounded by housing developments. Mm-hmm. I am in the back, and I'm south of me here. That'll be all built up shortly. And across the road is the Lewiston. And north, that's pretty well built up right now. Not only residences, but business places.
Yes, there's even talk that they're going to widen Lewis Avenue to accommodate all the traffic. Who lives south of you?
Immediately south?
Mm-hmm.
That was John Lasky. That was a 40-acre farm. And he had a team of horses, and he managed to take care of the whole thing himself, and I guess he got along very well.
And did Mrs. Paith buy that property from the Lasky family?
The Lasky's died, it went through a number of different hands. And the last owner before Richardson was here, that was Mrs. Pate. She'd been there for, I don't know, maybe 15 years, something like that. I'm not sure about that. I wouldn't. And across the road, of course, they and George Newcomb farm over there, that was always farmed. After the Newcombs passed on, it was sold once or twice or more. Now, of course, the buildings are all gone, it's all built up, everything has changed.
I believe that house was sold for a dollar.
Yes, sold for a dollar. The people who bought the house carefully took it apart, and I know that they they cleaned the brick and used them in one or two of their buildings over in Lambertville.
Lindsay's, I believe, the family that bought that.
Yes.
And built. You have kept a diary for a long period of time, is that right?
Yes, I started keeping a diary when I was 14 or 15, and I continued right straight through until about 1926 or 7, and then for some reason I got behind, and finally I thought, well, I'll just discontinue. And then along about 1947, I started up again. I've kept it up ever since. It's a great source of information if you want to check something, what happened at a certain time, or who was here, or things like that. Certain dates, you can always go back and check it on by the diary.
Now then, right in the beginning, I don't think we got the date straight as to when you did move out here. When was it that you bought the property and started building your house?
We bought the property about 1895, and we didn't get to, I think it was about 96 before we moved out, because of the we had to have a house and a barn. And we built the barn first. We lived in the barn, as I mentioned before, till the house was ready to move into.
Now, your parents lived here all the time then, following 1896.
Yes.
Until their death.
Yes.
And when did you lose your parents?
Well, my father died in August 1921. He was 85 or more, 85 years old, and my mother died in 45, and she was 87.
And I think they're buried down here in the Hitchcock.
And they're both buried down in the Hitchcock Cemetery. My wife is buried over in Lambertville Cemetery. Don't remember a whole lot.
That's always the case.
And, maybe sometime if I remember some things that I have failed to talk about, maybe we can hook them on later on.
Okay, we'll pick it up from here, and I thank you very much for your time this evening. I've enjoyed reminiscing with you.
Well, it's been a pleasure, I'm sure. You've always been a very good friend of mine.
And I feel that that's been a special privilege.
Anything I can do, I'd be very happy to do.
Okay, thank you. Howard Schuler is a well-known local artist and architect. He was born December the 16th, 1887, and was 87 years old at the time this recording was made. He was an early member of the Toledo Art Clan and was a founder of the Toledo Artist Club, which was organized approximately 1942. He retired from the firm Langdon, Holy, and Graham, which was later Langdon, Holy, and Schuler, in 1938. And spent 10 years with the W.D. Holtzman architect firm, retired in 1948. He is an outstanding artist, architect, and human being, and it has been a pleasure of mine to know him for the last 10 years.